lasers for stun and prepare for warp speed. It's time for the We Got the Geeks movie talk.
Hey there, martial arts fans. This is Jody and Meatball, John, and we've got a great podcast lined up for you, so stop what you're doing, put on those geese, and gather around for another episode of We Got the Geek Martial Arts Suggestion.
Yeah!
Woo!
Hey-ya!
Well, it's great to be back at it. You know, the last few we've done have been thoroughly enjoyable, I have to admit. It's always great going back and watching these movies, and, you know, I never need an excuse to watch them, but it's nice to have one. Like, oh, sorry, honey, gotta, you know, stop doing chores, can't wash the dishes, can't take the garbage out, I've gotta go watch Bruce Lee. You know, like, I finally have a reason to say that I'm watching these, not just because I like to see people get beat up. It's, you know, it's nice to have a purpose, and, you know, these are, you know, classic movies that we're looking back on, right?
That's true, yes. So, this episode, we're going to do Enter the Dragon. That's going to be the final of the Bruce Lee side of things.
Yeah, sadly, then, is the final Bruce Lee.
But it's the cornerstone, the masterpiece before he left this planet. So,
really was a turning point, you know, even though it was sadly the end of his career and the end of his life, it really was a turning point for martial arts movies in general. Really kind of set a new Hollywood standard for the quality of martial arts movies. Looked at around the world as well, you know, people got to see how much more, depth you can put into them. You know, not just having people fighting and kind of a story to go along with it. There was a lot of layers to this story. There was a lot going on. And I just found that, you know, if you look at any martial arts movie that came after Enter the Dragon, there's a lot more to them and a lot more quality to them. Even if there wasn't as much fighting, there was a lot more story, a lot more character development that came through that we never saw before Enter the Dragon, even right. With some of Bruce's movies. He certainly really did help make a huge difference to this kind of film genre in general with his last film.
Right, yeah. There was, because a lot of it was based off the Shaw Brothers and their kind of quick chop, put it together. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of action, a lot of flying around off trampolines and that sort of thing. Very little story and substance in that regard. With this movie, the version I was watching was the 25th anniversary version. That was the one I own.
Yeah.
I think it's up to the 40th anniversary is out now, and Blu-ray and DVD as
yeah.
well.
I have a DVD version. It's an anniversary version of some type. I know my VHS copy is the 30th one.
Oh, okay.
That you have. But my DVD copy is something, it's either the same cut or a slightly different cut, because I think there's like an extra 2 or 3 minutes of scenes in it.
Right, yeah. As the versions went along, they started adding it more of the scenes that were taken out from the original that was published, and they added more characterization, more a lot more philosophy into it. Like the opening sequence, for example, in this one, they did actually, I think the original started with the fight scene where he's fighting Sammo Hung
yep.
in the Shaolin Temple. And then it moves into, from there, I think it moves into when he visits Mr. Braithwaite, comes in and talks to him about his mission, that sort of thing. With this version, it actually adds, between those two kind of scenes, there was there was a part where they actually have the fight. Then he talks to the head monk or whatever you want to call him.
Yeah.
And he talks more a philosophy regarding some of the things.
Just kind of their belief system and, you know, how you should feel. Mm-hmm. In this kind of environment, in this kind of world.
Yeah, he asked him about his highest technique he hopes to achieve. And Bruce's response is to have no technique. So you can see kind of like where things are going here. And he asked him, what are your thoughts of when facing an opponent? And he answers, there is no opponent. So it's very philosophical at this point. He says, why is that? And Bruce replies, because the word I does not exist. So from there, it kind of goes into a lot of the philosophical chats, more like Zen philosophy on fighting And he mentions that Bruce has gone beyond the physical aspect of it. He's more on a spiritual plane, so to speak. And then Lao comes in, his student. I believe that was the next part. And he kind of teaches him for a bit.
Yeah, certainly a great mirror of reflection for Bruce outside of film. You know, just the way he developed himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as he progressed with his physical and put such high demand on his body to be that pinnacle of physical achievement that he was trying to reach, he also developed his mind, that philosophical aspect. And, you know, these were great mirror images of his thoughts and his beliefs, because, you know, those certainly weren't script points. Those were him.
Yeah.
You know, so you really weren't just watching a character develop and, you know, get attached to him. You were watching Bruce be himself more than any other film he's been in. Right there in that sequence, and it was great. It's certainly a sequence to help get you into that story and make you want to know more.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. He put a lot of himself in it, like his philosophies and that sort of thing at the beginning of the film. The fight scene, actually, interesting enough, the fight scene with he fights Sammo Hung in the beginning was actually added after the filming of Enter the Dragon was done. He looked at it and he said, you know what, we need more at the beginning. It's just kind of, you know, not tying in enough. So they went back and they filmed that sequence and then they added it later to it.
I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
And, you know, it's...
And then it's interesting because that really ties in a lot of stuff.
Absolutely.
You know.
And it's great to see, too, because I love looking back at these movies and seeing all of these great actors. You know, Sammo Hung had a great career. Still has a great career.
He's still going.
Every time you see all these individuals pop up where their paths are crossing in all these movies, and it really happened a lot in Bruce's movies, where all these people that we got to grow up with after Bruce's passing, they all were either getting their start just before Bruce or at the same time in his films as stuntmen or extras or what have you.
Exactly,
It's neat to see that, you know, because I'm a Sammo Hung fan as well. I really enjoy him. I didn't know that they filmed it afterwards. That's cool.
Yeah, it was. I always thought it was like part of it as well until I was doing some research on it and found out that it was actually added later. Like I say, Bruce was like thinking, you know, it just needs a little bit more at the beginning instead of like jumping right into the action where it kind of does, where he meets Braithwaite and goes from there. He thought, you know, let's kind of put something that would be beneficial to it, but also get across my philosophical ideas and that sort of thing.
Another great testament to Bruce's constant desire to improve, but also share this world with everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to be able to look back and put that in there. Most directors wouldn't say, hey, you know, I need to find something else to slightly slow down the story. I'm going to put it in right at the beginning.
Right.
Exactly. Most of them would be doing everything they can to cut that out and avoid it. You know, it shows that sometimes that has to be put in there.
Yeah.
You know, it probably would have been great without it, but look at how much better it is.
Right. It was all about, like, the beat and the timing for the film itself, and I think that does, that fight scene does add a bunch to it. And then he goes into the philosophical side with the head monk, and that, you know, you can take it out or add it, but I think by adding it, it actually made it... his character a little bit more well-rounded and understanding why he's there and what he's doing and why he's doing it. I think it just kind of fleshes him out a little bit better when they added that extra scene in there. And then it goes into, you know, Braithwaite comes in and gives him all, you know, the talking and wanting him to go to Han's Island and trying to get, you know, information. Yeah. We need some proof so we can nail this guy type of thing, because he's kind of on, I think he's on the way the island is, the part of it's on the British side of things in territorial waters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And the other side, I think, is in China or somewhere.
Yeah. Cause they couldn't come in from a certain direction or a certain way because of how heavily protected it is. Yeah.
Right.
I don't quite remember the details of that part myself, but yeah, it was something along those lines where there were certain limitations based on the jurisdictions, I think.
Right. Exactly. So this gets us to, then he stops because he's like, okay, you know, I need a moment with my student, which is kind of cool. You know, always being the master and still teaching his students on their time, right? So it was, he goes and he talks to Lao. That was the little kid that he comes up with, and that's the kind of the big one of the many scenes that, you know, everyone kind of memorizes. So with this one, it was when he's talking about he throws a kick or something. He's like, "Show me what you got," kind of thing. Yep. The kid throws the kick, and he's like, "What's that? An exhibition? You know, let's put some emotional content into it." So he throws the kick a little bit better this time, but he's like, "Hey, what are you doing?" You know, I said emotional content, not anger.
Yeah.
And then he kind of was like teaching him at the time, saying you have to be connected with it and you have to be actually in the now and not off daydreaming or whatever. You know, pay attention to what you're doing, but yeah, don't do it out of anger.
Yeah, you're not throwing a kick for the sake of throwing a kick. You're projecting yourself, not moving your foot. You're putting your energy into another place for a specific purpose, and you know, make sure that that's where your mindset is.
Right, exactly. So for example, when he says, hey, you know, so how does it feel? And he's like, you know, don't feel, think, right? Don't think, feel. Yeah. It's like a finger pointing away to the moon. Don't concentrate on the finger or you miss all that heavenly glory.
A great line, by the way.
You know, it is. It's one of those. And it's all those little gems in this film that, yeah, you know, everyone kind of,
again, those,
you know,
philosophical
word for word knows,
yeah,
those kind of, those quotes and that sort of thing. So it's
lines
cool
that still apply today in so many different ways. If you point your finger to look at anything, mm-hmm, you're going to miss everything around the
right
end of your finger.
Right, exactly.
So, you know,
it's the tree before the forest kind of thing. Sometimes you focus too much and you're missing everything else around it.
Certainly a great testament to how timeless all of Bruce's work and efforts were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he really was thinking so far beyond where anybody was at that time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, look at all these years later, you know, we're looking at, what, 40, almost 50 years
almost,
later.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
That,
and we're just catching up a lot
so much,
with what,
yeah,
he's doing and that sort of thing. A lot of people call him the godfather of MMA because he was cross-training before,
yeah,
anyone else was. Everyone,
yeah,
was like, I'm sticking with karate, I'm sticking with kung fu, I'm sticking with, you know, whatever. And it was, go outside of that style.
Yeah.
But he was like, screw that, I got an open mind, and I find that we can do better with the cross-training, and we can utilize certain things from different arts, you know? So
yeah, he really was, like you said, the first one to do that. But really, for so many years, the only person even remotely willing, you know, other than his students, who even then, you look at some of his students, as great as some of them were and are, many of them really stayed focused just on his style,
mm-hmm,
rather,
yeah,
than going outside of that. You know,
yeah.
So even he was even surpassing the students that should have then surpassed him, right?
Right.
You know, still, he was just light years ahead of everything, and, you know, just the opening start of this movie is just such a huge reflection of that, you know, it's so easy to just get hooked on the,
mm-hmm,
start.
Because he's doing, in the beginning, the fight with Sammo, like we were talking, that is great that he put it in because there's so many cool things about it in regards to setting the tone of the film and the, mm-hmm, pace. It's also, he's throwing in his art itself, he's throwing in like judo tosses and wrestling moves, and you know, there's,
yeah,
a bunch of other arts in that.
Just
that
showing
scene
the effort
itself
of adaptability,
yes,
to throw off an opponent who's stuck in a more rigid, fixed position, classic kind of form.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the art of the, you know, the fighting and the preparation of your body. He was taking the art to a whole other level.
Right,
you know,
exactly. And he was transcending. Like the monk says at the beginning, you've transcended the physical form.
Exactly,
you're now,
yeah,
into the spiritual end of it. So, yeah, that's, you know, when you watch him, that's kind of like, you kind of feel it first before you actually,
it's,
you
like
know,
like the difference
see
of
it.
Painting with a pencil and a paintbrush, right? Like it was right there. You're still creating a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just there's so much more you can do with one and over the other.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's a great example, actually. Yeah, being rigid or being flowing like the brush, right? You have more movement. And
or his
more
classic line of being fluid like water. You
right
know, it can flow or it can crack be water, right? That's the one that always sticks in my mind. I've never been able to get rid of that line.
No, that's pretty famous one, actually. But it's not part of this film. But
not part
was,
of this film,
no.
But just part of Bruce in general.
So
I guess we're going to take a, we might as well take a little bit of break. We've had a, quite a good chat about the start of this film. So, yeah, we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue on with our review of Enter the Dragon and Bruce Lee's final film.
And now, a word from our sponsors.
Face front, true believers. John Bulmer is an independent artist and illustrator. He has contributed to several indie comics published by Alterna Comics and more, and is able to draw in many styles and genres. John also does commission work in sizes ranging from 3x5 inches to 11x17 inches and even larger. Add some original art to your personal collection or surprise someone with a drawing just for them. Check out his work at drawnbyjohn.com and his Facebook group, Drawn by John, The Art of John J.C. Bulmer.
And welcome back. You know, we're back here on the martial arts edition of We Got the Geek, here with Jody. And as always, producing and controlling the equipment is our awesome host, Jay, who, you know, really keeps us in line here.
We just got a whip in on break there. Yeah.
You guys talk too much about the opening of the movie.
Let's roll
now.
Now
you got to get your ass in gear. But yeah, we're reviewing Enter the Dragon. Sadly, Bruce Lee's final film. You know, he did pass away. You know, right before this movie was released. Mm-hmm. But really, a wonderful achievement that really opened up a whole new world and a new view to martial arts films and philosophy and so much more, even just filmmaking in general for so many people. You know, we were just talking about how it had so many different elements and wonderful things just to start the movie off before we even get to the opening credits.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Opening credits, they come in 8 minutes into the film. Kind of, you know, not a standard by any fact today. But 8 minutes in, yeah, all that stuff happens, and then they start, you know, rolling the credits. I think he has the discussion with Braithwaite, finds out what's going on, and then, you know, off he goes type of thing. And
yeah, I think that one of the cool things about that is, you know, getting the opening credits so late in, you're just kind of left to sit there and stew on, wow, did I really just take all of that in? And if that's what we're getting before the movie starts, I'm amped. I'm ready to go. You know, I've got this stuff fresh in my mind, and now I want to know what happens next.
Right, exactly.
That's certainly the feeling that I got out of the start of this one. And I do every time I watch it. You know, I've seen it so many times.
Right,
and it's,
yeah.
You know, like, oh my God, I'm so ready to get in there. I want to know what happens next.
Yeah.
I know what happens next.
Yeah.
But I still want that.
But you just, you're like, oh, I can't wait for this scene, or I can't wait for that scene. Oh, yeah. Man, I love this part. You
absolutely.
Know? So it does, you know, it does draw you in, and then the opening credits start. So starts off with the scenery of the Hong Kong slums, actually, I believe, and some of the higher-end parts of town. The show, you know, setting the tone. So they're bringing in you see the jet coming in. So it lands at Hong Kong International.
Just full of establishing shots.
Right. That,
you know, kind of where you are and what's about to happen kind of thing. Yeah.
Exactly. So that then starts bringing in everybody. So the first fighters start to arrive. So Jim Kelly, who, like we were discussing on the break there, he just passed away.
Yeah,
I believe a few months back.
Yeah, not too long ago.
Not too long ago. It's pretty recent.
Yeah, he played Williams.
Exactly, right? Yep. And then they show him coming in, and then they show John Saxon, who is Roper at
great
the time.
Great character.
Yeah,
love
great
that character.
Yeah.
And, you know, great actor in general, but
yeah.
I love his character.
Yeah, he's a great actor, not a great martial artist, and that was the thing. But they pulled it off to make him look good enough to be, you know, one of the top guys at this tournament. But he was the only one that really wasn't out of the three, a martial artist, just an actor in that case. So that was kind of interesting to know. Because I remember when I saw it, I thought he was. Until, you know, as we get older and do more research on it and pay more attention, exactly, then you realize, okay, he pulled it off really well, you know, pretty impressive. Yeah. So
I really liked how they brought the three of them together so quickly.
Yeah.
To see that these are the dynamics we're going to be bouncing off.
Exactly. They set that established.
And they were all so different in so many ways, yet so similar.
Right.
They're on different paths, but on different paths in the same direction. I guess that's the only way I can describe it. And I really liked how quickly they came together,
mm-hmm.
you know, after it all meeting together with all the other fighters getting ready to go to Han's Island.
Right.
Just the dynamic that starts right off the bat is just... I love it. It was great. So well done.
Yeah, they do. What I loved about it was how they did flashbacks for each character. So they do flashbacks for Williams and Roper, and actually Lee starts off the flashback sequences when he's talking to the old man about going to Han's tournament, and the old man brings up the fact that, oh yeah, your sister, this is how she died.
Yeah.
And it was revealed that the scar on O'Hara's face was actually caused by this old man. Now, the old man, Bruce calls him Thanks Old Man at the end of the conversation, but I don't know if it's his father or what the significance was. I never can figure that out.
Could be his sensei or something.
Yeah, like that. It could have been something like that. And he was the one that actually gave O'Hara the scar by cutting him across the face. And then, in a way, O'Hara caused the death of Bruce's sister.
Yeah, so you've got that element of revenge that right. slipped in there.
Exactly, so that builds things up and sets up a tone for later on in the tournament. Excuse me. So, where was I with that? Oh, flashbacks, yes. So, then there's the flashbacks of Roper. We're talking. Roper's a great character in this film.
Really is.
Love this guy. He's your addict. He's a gambling addict and just doesn't know when to stop. He keeps putting himself in the hole.
Massive ego. He's so full of himself. He thinks he's up on that pedestal.
That's right.
He can't afford the pedestal he's on.
That's exactly it. He's got debts, coming out of his eyeballs, and he just can't cover them all the time. So this is what causes him to leave and to go to Hans Island. Roper. Williams, on the other hand, he's, I think he's an instructor at a martial arts Kenpo karate place.
Something like that.
And so he's going to go off to the tournament, and as he's going, these police stop him, and they're obviously racist.
Yeah,
and
again, you know,
they hound him for no reason.
And very important to get that sequence in there, because that's something that, you know, sadly it still happens today, but really, mm-hmm. in the 60s,
oh man,
it was just rampant.
Yeah.
And really important to show in there that, you know, it's not always who you're looking at. They're not who you think they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certainly he's a better quality of character. You know, and he can certainly handle himself.
Yep.
Obviously, he wasn't treated right, and he maybe shouldn't have reacted in the way he did.
Yeah.
With those police officers, but certainly something that was necessary.
Right.
And I was actually as painful it is to watch stuff like that. You know, given how we've been raised.
Yeah.
It's really necessary to have that in there, and still have that in there today to remember that people were like that, and it caused problems like that.
Yeah.
So a very important sequence, especially even in a flashback, I think.
Yes. So he ends up beating up the cops, like you said, and he was like, you know what, screw this, I've had enough.
Yeah.
I'm making my stand. I don't need to take this. Whether the police officers or, you know, just normal Joes, it would have been the same effect, you know. But being police officers, it made it a little bit more dramatic in this case. He beats them up, takes their cop car and takes off in it, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
And somehow magically doesn't get caught and ends up going to Hans Island as well.
Without the car.
Without the car. He flew there. So it ends up being that there's that flashback as well. So you have the three flashbacks, which kind of set everyone going to Hans Island and getting ready for the tournament. And so they go from the airport to, I guess they go on the boats to another big boat that carries them off to the island. That's and where all the action starts.
The beginning of, you know, the reception for the tournament.
Right. Exactly. Was going back for a bit. He, when his discussion with Braithwaite at the beginning there, he actually, the objective is to get proof that Han's selling women to an elite clientele around the world, and they need that information. And he obviously has to get it and get out. There's the difficult part.
Yeah, it's like a sex slave trade.
Right, exactly. And it's kind of interesting. This is like 1973, this film was made. And a lot of the films that we see nowadays, that is still going on as a theme in some of the other films.
Yeah.
Taken, I believe, for example, is one of them.
Trade of Innocence, dealing with younger girls, actually directed by a friend of mine.
Oh, okay.
Christopher Bissett. Yeah, it's something that is still such a bad thing that it's just almost like it won't go away no matter what anybody does.
Right.
All we can do is continue to raise awareness and really,
through film,
looking back then, it was like, again, people writing this story ahead of their time.
Right.
Nobody was looking at that then.
Mm-hmm.
We're really just starting to properly look at it now. And, again, they were way ahead of things, making sure that, this stuff had to be out there.
Right. So that's kind of Bruce's objective, and the reason why he's going on that. And so the British are sending him out to do that. They kind of cover it right off the beginning. He's like, well, why doesn't he, someone take a gun and bam, end it type of thing, right?
Yep.
So he says no guns on the island. So that kind of sets it to be strictly martial arts now.
Yeah, you know that you're not going to be dealing with anything.
Any long-range weapon is, definitely out in that regard. So he didn't want guns on the island because he had a bad experience with them, and he was fearful of assassination. Who wouldn't be, right, if you're the host of a tournament that large? So that's I love that they set that fact right near the beginning, and they kind of
have a purpose for it to be hand-to-hand combat.
Right.
It's not just people fighting for the sake of fighting. They're fighting because that's the only way that they can. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So then from there, we find out that Roper and Williams actually are buddies.
Yeah,
they've known each other in the past. So when they go on the big junk, the ship that takes
them... it was a junk.
It was a junk, right? Yeah. So it takes them to the main island, or Hans Island in this case. They haven't seen each other like 5-6 years. And
I think they were old, like, war buddies.
They were in Nam. Yeah, exactly. So they were old war buddies. So that was cool that they're getting back together again. And then once they hit the island, it's even funnier because they actually start a betting scam going between all the fights. Their fights, actually, just their two.
And don't we have Roper actually, betting on, praying mantis fights or something like that on the junk?
On the junk itself, yes, exactly. So that's why I'm saying this guy's great because he's an addict, and it's like he doesn't know when to stop.
No matter where he is. There's always a game going on somewhere.
He's betting all the time. So when they're on the junk, he bets Bruce on the praying mantises or two fights, and he loses. So he gets the money, and Bruce is a happy person. Like, hey, great, okay. And he bet him, he was just saying, Bruce is like, oh, I'll bet you 5-1. He's like, no, let's jack the stakes. How about 100-1? So there's this huge...
You almost get the impression Bruce is trying to teach him a lesson there that he just doesn't get.
Yeah, exactly.
And it really adds to that dynamic between the two of them as well.
Right. Because later on, Roper, again, asks for the money back and says, I'll bet you. And again, he's gambling on something, and I think he loses that as well.
Just going on his own luck that he doesn't realize isn't existent.
Right, exactly. He makes money on the fights that him and Williams have. But aside from that, he's so addicted to just gambling. And I think it's almost second hat for him just to say it. I'll bet you whatever.
Yeah, almost subconsciously.
No, subconsciously, it's just in the back of his mind.
But you're right. The dynamic between him and Williams during, I guess it's the training fights or the introductory fights.
Introductory fights,
How they've actually got other people there in the audience going along with these bets. And,
right.
Their little signals back and forth, how somebody couldn't see those nods.
I was thinking that too.
It's great to see that.
Because there's this long pause between, Roper gets his ass handed to him, first shot, and he's down, and he's down there for a good minute or so, and he's looking over at Williams, and Williams is giving no, the shaking the head ever so slightly, going no, and it goes on like that, and then, obviously he looks up again, and finally he's the guy's that's betting is giving him the two fingers, because I think the bet was 8-3 or something like that, so he was a double, and he's not, let's triple. And then the guy agrees, and then Roper or Williams gives him the signal, gives him a little head nod, and then
all of a sudden,
bam, boom, bang, he takes him out, and it almost looks like he nails him in the nuts, but I think he just nails him above that.
Yeah.
It's just the guy's facial expression that made me believe that when I first saw it.
And again, you know, that sequence there, something we still see in other films today.
Yeah.
The Last Samurai with Tom Cruise. You've got the guy's sitting on the sidelines betting.
That's right.
You know, between, you know, people doing the fights and stuff like that. It's just, I love seeing that, how these, you know, again, the movies that Bruce was in, there's so many elements that people just can't avoid because they're subconsciously in our mind.
Right.
Ingrained from these films.
Yeah.
That they just keep popping up everywhere else. It's awesome. Again, such a great dynamic with these characters. And you're not even paying attention to the fights at this point. You're paying attention to the characters and their interaction with each other.
Right.
And technically, they're not even really in the same scene. You know, one's fighting and one's over on the sidelines. But that dynamic is
fantastic. That connection between the two guys being in Nam together for so long, they kind of know how to play off each other.
Exactly, yeah.
So they're, you know, they have their signals and which
because you know they were doing it there.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Or you're led to believe that, right?
So, exactly.
Yeah, wonderful.
So that, prior to that was, being on the junk was obviously the betting of the praying mantis scene. But the other good scene on that is where he does the fighting without fighting. So he's a New Zealander. I can't remember his name. Parsons, I think, is his name.
Yeah.
He's the one character that, the antagonist. So he's sitting there and he's picking on...
Big guy.
Yeah, he's a big guy. He's picking on the Chinese fellows that are just, you know, working the ship, you know, bringing out the oranges and that sort of thing. And he kicks the guy, takes him out, you know, trips him up.
Your typical bully.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Full of himself.
So that, you know, you still have the bullies today, right? They're all around. But that's it in that regard. So, but that sets up a scene where he's then going to go and fight without fighting. So he gets him onto the little boat. We'll fight on that island. Thingy. And he goes for it. I'm like, okay, why are you going for it? So he does anyway, and Bruce ends up
just with lets the
rope go, and hands him out there, you know, for a while.
He's stranded on that dinghy towing behind the junk because he was gullible enough to think he was going to go be dominant in a fight on some island, like, idiot.
Yeah.
But again, when you're that bully, you don't have that mentality to outthink somebody.
Yeah.
So Bruce, again, using his brain over his brawn. Yeah.
Yeah, he just wanted to beat up people.
And another important scene to show philosophy and thoughts.
That's right.
You know, where we're watching a fighting movie, where fighting didn't even happen there, but you know he was beaten.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I think it's time for another break, so why don't we do that, and when we come back, we'll continue our review of Enter the Dragon as we go along.
Excellent. Sounds good.
Hold on, true believers. There's more We Got the Geek after these words.
Sketchbook Comics and Games is a store that has something awesome for everyone. In addition to selling comics, board games, and action figures, there are tables for open gaming. Wednesday nights, Sketchbook features game night starting at 6 p.m. Friday through Sunday, Sketchbook is the place to be for Magic the Gathering. The store is located at 224 Glenridge Avenue, Unit 9 in St. Catharines. Come on down for all your geek comic book needs.
All right, welcome back, guys and girls, and
everybody else,
and whoever else aliens. Is listening out there, aliens
and Elvis.
So this is the discussion on Enter. This is a discussion on Enter the Dragon, not Elvis, guys. Elvis actually is our producer's dog, by the way, for those that don't know. So
he's never seen a martial arts film, and he really sings poorly.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Enter the Dragon. Yeah, because I'm just going to go off on Elvis all of a sudden. So welcome back. And so last we were talking, we ended up.
Bruce is,
you know, fighting without fighting, and
the New Zealander is kind of the bully.
The bully is left on the junk
behind the junk, and
so that leads us then into them hitting the island finally.
Hans Island.
There it is.
The tournament.
Yes. So you get a, you know. They hit the island and they see Bolo for the first time, which is one of Han's henchmen. And I'll call her the mistress or the madam, actually. Yeah. And
the pimpess.
Exactly. The interesting fact is, I was watching that scene and I didn't catch it before, but in the foreground's Roper. Excuse me. And in the background is Bruce, kind of like behind him a bit.
Yeah.
And they're discussing it. And Roper mentions how hot she is.
Right? She was.
Yeah, she was pretty foxy. So he's like, wow, you know, that woman can make, you know, you feel like a real man kind of thing. I forget exactly what the line was.
It was something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and really get to know yourself or something along those lines. And then Bruce, without really doing much, but like we've talked in the other podcast regarding his facial expressions,
yeah,
just kind of smirks and kind of is like, damn, you're right. You know,
yeah,
kind
of thing. He's got that subtle acknowledgement of, yeah, Bruce, yep. You know what you're thinking about there.
Yeah, he's like, yep, she's hot. You know, good call there, Roper. So it was interesting catching that, like those subtle little hints of his, right? It was well done. It was really kind of one of those scenes that kind of sneaks up on you. And kind of sets things for Roper and her because, so they get to the island and then you kind of see the vast part of the island. He's all the henchmen.
Yeah,
they're all training and that sort of thing. And one of the funny things about that was the tennis courts. They were modified tennis courts at the time. And they're all on the grass and that sort of thing, doing their punches and kicks. And
your focus is clearly up at, you know, their fists, their faces, and their movements.
Right.
You never look down.
No, exactly. Yeah. So it was and it was a top view shot, so it was kind of interesting that you can kind of pick that out for just a moment as it's panning across. And you see these hundreds and hundreds of guys, you know, and henchmen training.
Yeah, impressive
right?
scene, for it's, sure.
It was a big scene. And kind of sets the tone, well, okay, Han's pretty ominous. He's got, like, all these...
This guy's got an army.
Army, exactly, yeah, of martial artists behind him. So then that leads us up to, from there, they kind of get settled in their quarters, and they're not allowed to leave their quarters. And actually, before that is the kind of the...
They have this opening ceremony.
Is it the opening ceremony? Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
and,
they're all kind of introduced to the island and Han. And,
right, and you get a nice sense of actually his hospitality and how much wealth he has. There's, like, dancers and performers and
sumo fighters.
And
but just, like, as an element of his power, you know, you've got so much activity in this room. You know, everything is busy. Like, as the camera pans around, you just see movement and activity in absolutely every corner of the scene. Like, they just packed it, like, so brilliantly, the way they set up this set. And then Han enters the room.
And it stops.
Everyone's frozen.
Yeah.
In their position. Even the birds go silent.
Yeah, which is weird.
Yeah, it was just, but, like, the wrestlers and
the wrestlers, yeah,
the
sumos.
They just hold their position, and it's just like, you know, this guy has his shit together.
Yeah.
And they know it.
Yeah.
You know, because who else commands that kind of respect?
Right, exactly.
Right? So it's, you know, that you get that feeling of he is all powerful kind of thing on this, on his domain when he walks into this room.
Yeah.
You know, and it's an impression you don't see coming through that clear in a lot of movies now.
Right, exactly.
You know, where, you know, the bad guy enters the room and, well, he's just a bad guy because, oh, he shot somebody or he beat somebody up. This guy walks into a room and gets dead silence.
Yeah, he commands
a room
attention.
Full of activity, and yeah, it's just excellent, excellent entrance for this character.
Right. So then he kind of sets the tone, welcomes everyone, you get a sense of his wealth, because everything's, you know, really a lot of money.
Extravagant.
Yeah, extravagant.
Very lavish.
School, you know, with, yeah, exactly. I can't talk.
It's okay. I'll use the big words, Jody. It's all right.
Thank you. So that kind of sets the scene in that case.
And that's where we meet
and
the girls.
That's where the girls come into play. So I believe I think Han throws the apples, and then they throw darts.
Yeah, the different girls
throw darts. One has an earring, throws it. One blows the dart out of her hand.
Yeah.
And then there was another one, I think, just throws it.
She just throws the dart,
right?
And she's the key one.
Yeah. The one that blows out of her hands is the key one that the British actually have an agent on the inside, and that's the one girl that coincidentally catches the dart. Bruce catches the apple with the dart in it that
belongs to the girl,
right? Yeah. So then later they go to the rooms, and then the madam comes along and brings all these lovely ladies to, you know, spend the evening with them.
It's a wonderful
It's a great concept. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think we don't see enough of that anymore. at least
before the big tournament.
At least cheaply.
You know?
But that's just me. That's just a personal note. I'd love to see that a little bit more often. But you know, it was great. It really shows not only the continued power that Han has, but also the efforts that he goes to make sure that all of his guests are comfortable and have right. this false sense of security
mm-hmm.
that, you know, this guy is going to spoil me
right,
as long
exactly.
as I'm here.
And I think that's why Roper loves this guy.
Yeah.
Because he's like, hey, you're a man of wealth and taste, and so am I, so we're going to get along really well. And I think that's why they kind of connect later on.
Yeah.
Right? So
yeah, and it's clearly a tactical ploy on Han's mm-hmm. part to lure people into his organization.
Right.
You know, it's the reason for the whole tournament. And, you know, this is just a prime example of, you know, what's the best way to get a guy on your side?
Yeah.
Get him laid.
Exactly.
If you're responsible for that.
I'm going to throw women at you.
Indirectly, of course, but if yeah. you're responsible for that, then, you know, the person's going to be nice to you because you're going to get them a readily available supply, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah, always so great tactic.
That brings us to, yeah, so Roper actually chooses the madam as his, you know, lady of the evening. And then Bruce doesn't get any because he just wants the lady that did the dart. So they send her down
and
where he gets to talk with her and find out what's going on. And we realize that she doesn't have any more intel than he really needs to know.
But it really helps.
She can't leave the palace and
yeah.
she's got only so many areas that she can go through.
But it
go
helps
down.
Bruce understand what level he's at when he starts his investigation.
Right. Exactly. So that allows him then to, you know, do a little bit more investigating, that yeah. sort of thing.
And then there's Williams.
Oh, yes. Williams, who...
We can't leave out Williams.
No, this is the funny part, because Williams actually decides to pick, like, I think, like, a handful of women.
Yeah, there's like
not just
four or
one.
Five.
He's got, like, maybe five, four
I'll
or five,
take,
six, something like that.
I'll take you and you and... And you, and what was the line? I gotta save my energy,
that's
something like
right.
that. Yeah,
yeah. Of just, course, Mr. Williams. So
that's almost like the classic kind of thing you would see in those 60s and 70s blaxploitation films.
Right.
Was that classic African American character who's just he's tough, he's suave, and he, you know
he's
just
well hung.
He's a
ladies like
he's
him.
A smooth mother effer. You know he. He can handle that, right?
That's right,
you know,
yeah.
Us white boys, we just can't. And you know what? I agree. We can't sound like that. But yeah, it was just a great scene to help, again, show that character.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, again, so much focus on the development of these characters, even though you don't realize it's development. It's just, you're really getting into who they are. It was just such a hilarious scene, like you said. One of those classics that you just gotta
imagine. It was, yeah. So... being one of the classic scenes, which sets him up later as well. So he decides to you know, I got to get some air and kind of work out a bit and kind of, you know, loosen up. And the one girl
well,
says that
out,
he can't.
Of course.
That's right. He was exhausted.
Fresh air.
Yeah, exactly. So he, you know, decides to leave and he can't. The lady still tells him not to. So he's like, what are you going to stop me? Come on. I'm like a, you know. Badass martial artist here, you know?
Your best girls and I'm tough. I make Shaft look like a wimp, so
yeah.
I'm going to go for a walk.
So he takes off and steps outside to get some fresh air, and that's when I think at that point Bruce decides to go and, you know, seek his investigation and find out more what's going on the island, because it's not all that it seems to be at the yeah. beginning. Right?
And it's just coincidence that they're both at the same time,
right.
which works out to be in Bruce's favor, of course.
Mm-hmm. Of course. So Bruce then dresses in his, you know, black ninja kind of outfit and takes a stroll on the island and that sort of thing. And obviously the guards are, you know, second rate, you know.
Yeah, they're just
clang. The one guy I think's got a pair of chucks and he clangs it on the bell or something. I forget what he hits, but he's like, "Whoops, yeah, I meant to do that." You know,
yeah.
And he kind of looks around. No one's there, so he just
minimum
keeps
wage.
Mowing.
Gotcha.
Definitely, yeah, they're like, you know, rent-a-cops. So he then ends up going down and finding a vent.
Yeah, just kind of stumbles
opens,
across.
Stumbles across it when he was hiding from one of the guards. So he goes down into this new lair.
With his bright white rope.
Yeah.
Pre-tied with knots.
Pre-tied, which was great, man. He was definitely thinking ahead.
Exactly what he needed to do.
Yeah, he was like, okay, if I find an area where I need to go down, I got to have a rope with, you know, the knots all tied.
At least, you know, 14 knots.
And it's just perfect length, too, yeah. Which just blew my mind. I'm like, wow, that's a good...
But it takes him into the underground of Hans Island.
Right, so he gets down.
Where the business
is. The belly of the beast, right?
This is where we really get that proper look at
what's going on,
what's happening.
Exactly, yeah. So this leads us down. So he goes down, sees some stuff, gets out of there quick.
He just gets a kind of a good recon of the area, avoiding the guards, making sure he kind of knows what he's going to be dealing with and what's happening there. So, you know, now that we know what's going on under the island, now we come back out.
Right.
You know, we get on to the next day, which, you know, obviously leads to a little bit more darker side of what's happening as we lead in towards the climax.
Right. Just slightly before that, Williams does see Bruce leave, though.
That's right.
Right?
He does catch him.
And he's like, wow, a human fly. And he takes off up the wall.
Yeah.
And so
I forgot about that.
That's why he was out there getting the fresh air, right?
Yeah, so, you know what? That reminds me of a line actually a little bit later on.
Yeah.
When Williams is confronted. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So at that point, then, you know, Hans obviously notified what's going on, and he tells them, you know, obviously not everyone's enjoying the hospitality. And taking things in their own hands.
Yeah, he's taking it as an insult.
That's right. It's like, how dare you guys, you know, I give you all this great stuff, and now, you know, you want more type of thing, and by snooping around. So it ends up being that the guards get killed. This is where Bolo comes into play now. Bolo Young is the big muscle-bound kind of bodyguard.
Very iconic-looking character. When you know him, when you see him, you know exactly who you're dealing with in all the movies across his career. Even if you don't realize it's him in them, you just nobody else looks like.
And he did prior to this movie. He did like a ton of films.
Yeah.
Prior to this, and so he was a big known star already in China, and this is where
Bolo's character
ends up, killing the guards.
Taking them out.
Their sloppy work, and at that point. Han then turns to him and says, you know...
Turns to Williams.
All right, well, sorry.
Yeah.
Why do I keep saying Roper? You got me on a Roper thing.
It's because they're one character, right?
Exactly. So Williams then... Han turns to Williams and ends up saying to him, you know, are you shocked? And he says, I'm only shocked because you're in sloppy work kind of thing.
Yeah.
Han's kind of now suspecting Williams because he was informed that Williams was the only guy that was outside of his... you know,
out of his room.
Room at, at that time at night. So Bruce is totally in the clear at this point.
Yeah.
And then,
and this is where him seeing Bruce kind of comes into play because he says, you know, I don't know who did this to your guards, but I wasn't the only one out of my room.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He explains that a bit later on. So, I guess we'll take a break now and then we'll come back. This sets up the big scene between Bruce and O'Hara.
Big turning point right here.
Yeah. So we'll go from there.
Stay tuned, loyal listeners. There's more We Got the Geek still to come.
Kristen Hunter is a Canadian artist specializing in polymer clay creations. Kristen is a geek at heart, and most of her creations are nerd-themed. She makes everything from Captain America earrings to video game-inspired necklaces and everything else in between. Check out Kristen's amazing work at www.wasabeads.com or visit her Facebook group, Wasabeads Custom Creations.
And we're back.
Woohoo!
Yeah, you know, continuing on our so far an awesome discussion about Enter the Dragon and, again, the final movie of Bruce Lee's career. Enter the Dragon's not my favorite of his career, but it is for many.
Yeah,
because of the impact that it had, and you know, it was the big Hollywood feature.
It was actually the first film to actually have a Chinese company and the major Hollywood studio working together.
Yeah,
for a film, strictly just a martial arts film, let alone not just a film, but the cornerstone of the martial arts world, right?
Yeah, so we've had an awesome discussion so far. We're more than two-thirds of the way through now. We're at the point now where, Mr. Han has had a chat with the awesome character of Williams and questioned, why he's maybe not necessarily enjoying the hospitality, which leads us to the next day where we're back in the tournament.
So the next, you're right, it's the next day, and this is where Bruce first gets his scene on the island where out of the tournament he fights. So they call him up, Mr. Lee, you ready? He's like, yep. So he doesn't know who he's fighting. He looks over down the line and then he sees them pull O'Hara.
Yeah.
Of all people, right? Badass. Like, wow. So this is the guy that killed his sister. And like you said earlier in our discussion, it was the revenge motto. Kind of
revenge.
Yeah, kind of that element comes into play here. I don't think he meant to, I don't think he was going in with the intention of, I'm going to kill this bastard. I think he was just like, okay, it's just a tournament. Just make my way through it. That's not my end game. My end game is to get the info for the British and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think he probably was going in there, like, character-wise, not necessarily to fully gain that revenge, but to kind of just go back and kind of reclaim some honor of, humiliating this guy. I'm going to beat him, and I'm going to make him understand that he's not the bully he thinks he is, kind of thing. I think that's kind of where the character was going there, because he had that bigger picture and that bigger objective to go forward with.
Right.
But very cool scene. Yeah. You look down that line and there's O'Hara.
There's O'Hara with a scar, and he's like, oh, great. So it ends up being that, he's dead serious. They come up to the line. And in traditional tournaments, it's more or less, you never touch your opponent. You're on one end, the judges and the referees in the middle, and then, you have your other guy in the center, and then he just has his hand out between you two and raises it, and then, you combat, right?
Yeah.
In this case, this is a genius from Bruce in the case of
back of the hand touching.
Right. So that ends up leading into a lot of Wing Chun stuff. So this ends up, like, trapping, and he's able to pull off
another
stuff
style that really was never properly seen. Certainly in American cinema.
Right. So this
Wing Chun is still not that popular where people would actually witness it,
Right.
A lot of movies that we'll get into with other actors down the road.
Definitely, yeah.
But Wing Chun, something that's, a style that I really think is awesome.
Yes.
But really never really properly seen back at that time.
Exactly. So this leads into a great setup for a beautifully choreographed fight scene in this case. So right off the bat, you can sense your opponent's movement through his hands. Bruce was so sensitive, so it was like he can, feel him before he's going, right?
Just being geeks in that comic book element to add in here, this fight sequence, you can take out the element of it being choreographed, and you almost just get the impression that Bruce has spider sense.
Exactly,
you
yes.
really do.
Yeah,
but it's the style. It's his preparedness. So many elements come together. But you get that impression that he knows what's going to happen before it happens.
So, exactly. So just as O'Hara's about to move, Bruce just pops him one. And it's like, not just a pop, it's like, bam! You know, and O'Hara drops like a rock. Like, he just took a shot in the face, man. So he gets up, and they go at it again. Same thing kind of happens. And the beauty of it, this time O'Hara picks up what he's doing, so he blocks the punch, which then leads Bruce into parrying that punch and so on and so forth, and he gets to hit him. So at this point, it's just a back and forth. He starts humiliating O'Hara. He's getting kicked, smacked in the face. O'Hara's going down.
He's kind of breaking him down.
He's
bit
breaking
by
him bit by bit. Exactly. So he's chipping away at the stone in this case, and O'Hara is like, I've had it kind of thing, right? So he lunges at him. Bruce, I believe at this point, does a stepping sidekick and just nails him hard. And he falls back into, like, three guards that were trying to stop him as well, right, from falling. Now,
another one of Bruce's iconic style kicks,
right,
though.
Exactly.
It's where he's putting his entire body and being projected through his foot. Again, taking us back to the philosophies at the very beginning of the movie.
Right, exactly.
You get to see this happen again.
Where he's talking about it hitting first before, your physical,
you're not just kicking,
your energy's hitting it first, and then your body comes in. This is actually a very iconic scene. because those guys in real life, those guys actually ended up, one of the guys catching him broke his arm, right? Yeah. Now there was a whole hoopla about Bob Wall was the fellow who played O'Hara, and he was in the other films, right? Knows Bruce, good friend with Bruce. And they wanted to make it as realistic as possible in this case. Some people then, the hype engine started and Bruce was angry at him and, wanted to get revenge because later on in the scene. So he goes down. Maybe I'll segue into this. So he goes down. O'Hara was now had enough, and he grabs two bottles. Now, at the time, they didn't have sugar bottles where you can break and, no one gets hurt. They were real bottles.
Real glass.
He breaks them and lunges at Bruce with the one, and Bruce kicks it out and then, kicks the crap out of him at that point.
Finishes him off, yeah.
But during a couple of the takes, he miscalculated the lunge, and actually his hand got cut on it. And that led to, Bruce wants revenge against him for, keeping face, and Bob Wall is going to get it, which led to that huge kick. But Bob Wall's been interviewed, and he said, no, it had nothing to do with that. It ended up being that we just wanted to make it as realistic as possible. And we had, he was like, go ahead, do it. I'll be able to take it. And, he took a solid kick, yeah. Like a mule kick,
that's
right?
That's like taking a full-on kick from Bruce Lee is the perfect definition of take one for the team.
Right, yes.
So think about that totally the next time you're at work and, somebody says, somebody's got to do a coffee run or some kind of
minimalist task. Yeah.
Tedious little task that nobody wants to do, and they say take one for the team. Think about this scene, because you could either, go get coffee or go do all the photocopying. Or you could have Bruce Lee kick you full force into five other men. Think about that. Certainly good motivation to continue on in your day.
Exactly. So that was like kind of the big iconic scene. And then after he kicks the crap out of O'Hara, he goes down the big jump up, lands on him and breaks his neck kind of thing.
Breaks his ribs or something like that. Yeah. He crushes him.
Yeah. He's dead.
You've got the iconic of just face of pain and realization of what he did.
Yeah. This is the whole, in one scene on through his face that we've talked about before with Bruce's facial structures and, a lot of emotion comes through
on
it.
His face is just as fluid as the rest of his body.
Right.
You get to see him go through three emotions in a second.
Exactly. And so he had all these emotions of, revenge and anger and sadness and, everything for his sister. And just a whole whack of stuff in there.
Despair of wow.
Yeah, you made me kill you. That's what I got from him when he was done with it. It was I'm sorry I killed your guard. But he did it in such a way that was very, cool. And O'Hara, Han realizes this and says, O'Hara's disgraced us and, I forget what exactly the line was, but it kind of moves on then from there.
Yeah, it kind of just makes it okay for Bruce
right.
to...
It was like, okay, he killed him. I accept it. He disgraced us.
He got what he deserved.
Right, exactly. So then they drag his body off. And I believe that then starts leading into Bruce going down and doing some more discoveries.
This is the second nighttime investigation where they're a little bit more prepared for him.
Right, exactly. So they end up, I think prior to that...
Well, it kind of at the same time, we kind of got a dual sequence going on here where we've got Roper.
Right,
Han is taking Roper
into
the underworld, much as he did with Williams. Because, as you said, Roper's always looking for that next game, really enjoying Han's hospitality, really loving the way things are working here, and knowing that he's not going to have it this good anywhere else.
Yes.
Han is offering him an opportunity.
That's right.
Come on board, join our organization.
Yeah.
And while this is happening, we've got Bruce starting his second investigation. And that's now we've got somebody who's deliberately out of his room and in the underworld, in Han's care. And somebody else who's snooping around who shouldn't be. And, this is where we get to have Han having a chat with Roper about the future of
right.
their relationship.
Yeah. kind of an another iconic scene. Well, they're all iconic. What can I say, right? But I think these are just, when I say it that way, I believe that these are just like a lot of the scenes that people remember.
Yeah, iconic stick out with the characters.
Exactly.
For sure.
So Han challenges Roper by putting a cat in the guillotine. Okay, remember that? And you're thinking he's going to, you know.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Those little sequences.
Yeah, I told you, man.
It's just
those
to
little
test
ones.
The character.
Yeah. So he then challenges him with it, and Roper pulls the cat out. He's like, you know, I got too much heart. You know, I can't kill the animal. And only to discover that Han pulls the chain, which should have dropped the guillotine, but it ends up being an elevator. They kind of drop down in, which then leads Roper into seeing the heroin business or opium
that
they're using to make heroin with, and then they drug the girls with, keep them locked up and chambered in their plastics or clear cells.
Plexiglass.
Right? Yeah, plexiglass, exactly. So
not the standard way you would keep women in your possession.
No, no.
I think
it was like an experimental thing.
Yeah, it's almost like they're testing
the quality.
To see what they
and,
can do, yeah.
Right. So he realizes that Han's more sinister than he was first letting on.
Yeah.
You know, with the hospitality and
there's no real honor there. He's not offering the hospitality to give you a place in his organization that's a good place.
Mm-hmm.
This is this guy's pretty badass. Maybe not the kind of person you want to be involved in business with. Because you might not make it out kind of thing.
Right.
You got that impression starting to work in his mind where those questions are there like, wow, how deep am I actually getting into
that? Yeah, exactly. You can kind of tell Roper's now, oh, I think the shit's hitting the fan now.
Yeah.
And he offers him the, to, you know, be part of the organization and that sort of thing. And I believe he turns it down.
He thinks about it.
Later.
He's starting to think about it, yeah, at this point.
He gives him that eye, thinks, okay, I might be on board with this guy. Kind of, you know, let's see what else is going on.
Yeah, he's getting that little impression that it might be worth it.
Right.
He's maybe a little bit more intense than he thought, but, it, you know, it's an offer, and an offer that has to be considered. And, you know, then he's given, I think that's when he's given his reason maybe not to.
Right. So prior to that, though, like you say, they had the two scenes going. Prior to that, Williams ends up getting the snot kicked at him by Han.
That's right.
Right?
We do cut back to that.
And he ends up fighting him in the kind of an opium den. And the girls are... He literally falls... Well, Williams gets kicks or something. He falls back, smashes his face against his one girl. And her glasses break. And she's laughing away. She feels no pain.
Yeah.
They're high as a kite. And then this ends up...
Yeah, so this...
setting up Williams being killed.
Yeah.
And reveals that Han's hand is made of metal. And that Williams is then hung up in a cage.
Strung up, yeah.
And this Roper now has to make the decision. Do I
go with
this ruthless SOB or...
Yeah, we forgot to touch on that battle back when we were discussing Williams. But yeah, this is the turning point for Roper to realize that Han is willing to take everything a little bit too far.
Right.
And when we see this... This is where we've got Bruce actually in the underworld starting to kind of come in a little bit closer.
Yes.
Where you've got these two storylines converging in the underworld to take us on to what's about to happen. And we'll discuss that
when we come back. Woo!
And now, a word from our sponsors.
Mostly Comics has been serving the Niagara region for over 30 years. The store sells a variety of comics and entertainment-related products, including graphic novels, toys, and collectibles. Mostly also purchases rare comics upon appraisal. Visit Kim and the Gang at 413 St. Paul Street in St. Catharines, or check out their website at www.mostlycomics.com.
And we're back. Again, continuing, myself, the Meatball, John, and Jody,
our martial arts
captain of the guards here, with as always is our wonderful producer Jay. Just kind of now wrapping up our review of Enter the Dragon. We're just kind of coming into that end sequence with so much activity. We've given so much detail going through it so far. With all of the stuff that's happening now at the end of this movie, so many different layers and so many different things going on. It's kind of best if we just kind of actually, go with more of a point-by-point basis to wrap it up into the climax here. Because, everything up until then has been this long build-up to just, boom, shit hit the fan, and it's a big freaking fan.
Yeah.
And that's really where we are now. You know, Bruce is in the underground. Roper's pissed because Williams is dead, and he's turning down Han. And, you know, Bruce realizes, you know, okay, everything's got to go down now.
Yeah, Bruce is building up intel at this point and running around downstairs. And then he throws a cobra, actually, into the guard station,
right? The snake that they had prepared for him at the entrance, that vent that he used to get down. He captured it. Clearly not something that they were expecting.
No, definitely not.
But he took it with him down there, and he throws it into that radio room.
Yep.
Gets the guards out of there.
They jump out, really, throw a chair through a window, and we're like, out of here, snake!
And, you know,
and then he gets in and makes the call, the stress call to the British or wherever.
They even have that little element of humor there, too. He's doing something serious where he's getting things going, but he puts his foot on the cobra to hold it down while he sends the radio message. Like, really? He's not badass enough to capture a cobra and use it against other people, but he just kind of casually holds his foot on it?
Uh-huh.
Come on.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is, yeah, that's what, I think that's what triggered the alarm was
the message. He sends up the distress call, which triggers the alarm, and the start of all the shit happening. So
yeah, we got guards coming.
Guards start running out of the woodwork. Yeah,
just, you know, in typical Bruce fashion. Oh, so, five guys,
nothing. No problem.
Yeah,
that's easy. So he then jumps out and he starts, you know, kicking butt left, right, and center. And I think he gets his shirt ripped, and he's like, you know. Time to show the pecs. Time to show the biceps. Rip. Off comes the shirt.
Out comes the nunchucks.
Out comes,
I think he's got a staff at that point, too.
The nunchucks come, he takes out a guard, I believe. And then he grabs the chucks. And then he starts whipping them around.
At this point, his fights are
like, I'm taking a weapon, boom.
Yep.
And all the guards come in, and they have other weapons, that sort of thing. He starts popping people left, right, and center.
And you're seeing his proficiency with all these different weapons as he's going through. Again, another element you see in films today. Great example, Ong Bak. You know, Tony Jaa doing it in his sequence towards the end. You know, look at, he goes through 10 different weapons in one scene. You know, again, going back to Bruce Lee and what we all have ingrained in our mind.
Yeah, definitely an homage to that. You know, so much great stuff in this film. Like you say, that, you know, other films pull off of. So he ends up, using the chucks, taking the staff, and he's whacking guards left, right, and center with the staff.
Dropping like flies.
He ends up, I believe, getting two sticks, and ends up, you know, double sticks, and starts whacking people, guards with double sticks. First time you see that. That comes from Kali or Arnis or that sort of thing, the Filipino arts. So, you know, boom, 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 another thing there, right? Staff is Okinawan. Japan, right? Boom, boom, boom. The chucks, I believe, are from Okinawa as well, or somewhere in there, because it was used for wheat and separate the chaff. So he's, you know, bouncing around, cracking guards left, right, and center. This is a great scene. This introduces Jackie Chan to the mix, where he comes in as a stuntman.
Yeah.
And I'll talk about that a bit later. So he's going around and taking out the guards. He gets, I believe he gets captured. He actually lets out people as well. There's other...
Yeah, he finds some prisons or jail cells
that have tons of
other fighters in them.
Yeah. I think one of the ladies actually lets them out later on. He gets caught.
Yeah, I think we've kind of skipped over a sequence that we could probably go into, but no worries. Yeah, no worries. Watch the movie. You'll know it.
It's great. And
but yeah, we've got all these other fighters now coming out of their jail cells, and Bruce is still kicking ass. And
so he gets caught, and then I think they end up trying to put him up against Bolo, I believe.
Bolo Young, I think so.
Yeah. Bolo goes against, I think it ends up being Roper.
Yeah, because they were both captured and kind of forced into this. Yeah.
And I think he beats, yes, somehow Bolo gets beat.
Yeah,
I can't remember who does it.
Yeah, that's where we're.
Yeah, I'm foggy still on that part.
So yeah, the other fighters haven't been let out yet because this fight's going on with them as captives. And like you said, that's when Bolo's beat. That's when the girl releases these other fighters.
Yep.
And they all come running out. And then we have this big fight on the tennis courts.
That's right, on the tennis big
yeah.
mother, just you know, all around brawl.
Army against army.
It's a free for all.
kind of thing.
Yeah. So then there's, and it's interesting in that scene when all hell's breaking loose. If you look at the bottom right-hand side of the screen, you'll see Bruce running around choreographing the whole thing.
I never noticed that. I'm going to be watching
for
that.
Yeah, check it out
next
time. It's actually pretty funny. I didn't know that myself, but.
But yeah, it's you get this massive scope of the battle, right?
Yeah.
We got Han's army against what he clearly had another army of people in jail cells.
Yeah.
Like, man's got a lot of cells. Holy crap.
So,
but this is where we kind of get into Han.
This is the big fight. And then, Han goes after Bruce at that point. And then gets, raked up a little bit.
A little bit of shit kicking going on up there.
I think he ends up with a bear claw on at that point. Pulls it out of his little case, and Bruce gets cut up a bit.
Not that much, but this
no,
where
just
it
a little
starts.
Bit, yeah. And then Bruce pops him one, and then knocks him back, and the bear hand comes off because it's now embedded on a stump, right? Yeah, or chair or something of that nature.
But that's where Han finally gets the impression. Shit.
This guy's good.
Yeah, he's a little bit tougher than even I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I need to go into a more protected space.
Right. At the very beginning, when Bruce... It's kind of important because Bruce talks to that monk right before he leaves off. It's mentioned that there is a rogue monk that is actually going against the disciplines of the Shaolin Temple.
Yeah.
Which turns out that's Han. As we find out later on. But it's interesting because, you're from the Shaolin Temple. You got to be good, not just good, crazy good.
Yeah.
So to be Bruce, the Shaolin guys we're sending our absolute best to take this guy down. That's pretty huge.
Yeah.
So Han then takes off and he goes down in his, fortress there and Bruce follows him, I believe.
Yeah,
and then
chases after him.
Chases him into this kind of war museum,
right?
Yeah,
the
memorabilia.
Weapons and, all kinds of really awesome stuff.
Yeah, awesome. I would like to have that and that and that. There's like a lot of armor, samurai armor, and various other things. I think there's a skeleton of a hand that you see in one of the cases, which you realize later that's Han's hand. So it comes up, he takes like the 4 or 5-bladed hand, I believe,
I
he attaches
it on. I think it's 5, but it might be 4. It's an optical illusion when you look at the blades on that bit because of the way
it's
they
like,
keep turning it.
It's like early Wolverine, really.
Yeah, I'm
you
pretty
know?
Sure it's 4.
Yeah, I believe
but,
so.
Yeah,
yes.
It's just basically it looks like 4 steak knives sticking out of a metal box, pretty much, that this guy's
He locks it in
his
hand,
and I wouldn't want to screw with
No.
but I'm not Bruce Lee, right?
Yeah. So they have a great fight scene there.
Yeah, it's just you can see where you've got...
Bruce is getting a little, he's getting cut up a bit
just,
here and there.
Han's doing this unleashing raw power, just taking out everything.
Yes.
Showing that, his hand is just going to cut through everything.
Yeah.
See what happens when it hits flesh. And, it kind of just, it does go back and forth at that point.
Yeah, at that point
again,
it's a bit of a back and forth battle, though.
You get that element that, again, Han is starting to feel Bruce's power when he's coming back, and that's what leads us into the...
So he throws a spear at him, and it hits a wall, and then goes through
the wall,
and then...
Turns.
Yeah, then you see it start turning. Han then slips into this, and this is the Hall of Mirrors scene, which
the
I like
pinnacle.
To call. The,
this is the climax.
The climax, the fight scene for the whole film, which everything leads to. I believe that Bruce very cautiously follows
just
him in.
Just slips in
Just taps in. And even then, he's very like cat-like with his hand, just touching it and making sure, I'm not going to get, another slicing at this point.
The important thing to note there is, as quick as this scene goes in the mirrors, because we're at the climax, everything has to be fast-paced.
Yeah.
They filmed it in such a way that for something that's only 2 or 3 minutes long in total, it seems like it's 5 or 10.
Yeah.
Like, it's really filmed so well that you think it's a lot longer, so you've got a serious anticipation at this point.
The crazy cutting editing of it was that you have the guys fighting upstairs, right? And it's fast and furious and just a free-for-all. And then downstairs, it's very methodical. All of a sudden, the pace slows. Bruce is in the mirror being very cautious. It's confusing. You have all these images.
Han jumps out, hits him, slices him, jumps back. You don't know where he is.
Where the hell am I? Where did he come from, right? And then he turns a corner and he gets hit again. he slams back, and that's the, you know, he gets cut on the back shoulder, and then he leans against the mirror, and he starts going forward, and he's the blood on the mirror, and you realize, holy crap, you know, he could get killed in this case, because this is so...
Yeah, you really get the impression that now Bruce is outmatched, right? Because Han is now in his element of deception.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So, leaning back to the monk scene, too, he talks about imagery, and it's all about, you know, a deception. And if you break the image, then you will be able to, you know, win against the opponent. So that leads Bruce into going, oh, yeah. And then decides to break the mirrors as he's going along. So he's throwing everything at it, kicks and punches and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Breaks it all
off. Very powerful strikes.
Yeah, yeah. And then Han is now comes in to attack at him, and Bruce catches him, and then, you know, that sidekick, yeah, boom, and launches him into the spear that's still stuck in the door. Which kind of ends, is kind of almost the ending.
That's the end of Han.
Ending of the Han in the battle. And he ends up twirling around.
Yeah,
Bruce
the walls
leaves.
Are still just spinning, yeah. And he's just on this spear, and you're like, you know, what a fitting end to such a dangerous character. Yeah.
And the whole music of that thing, I always remember that as well. It's kind of like a, I don't know, it's you got to see it, but it's hard to describe. But it's perfect for that spinning your dead body.
It keeps your emotion going with, like, wow, that just happened.
Yeah, yeah. So Bruce goes up, and then you see what happens. They pan slowly across
of the war between these two armies. Yeah.
Right.
The casualties.
The casualties. A lot of people, good people down. A lot of the bad guys are, you know, still being beat up, and they're just exhausted, but they're still
like
wailing away,
thrown back
and forth.
People, just...
Yeah. You realize that a bunch of the characters, and Roper's alive still. He's exhausted.
Yeah, he's just blown right out.
His madam that he was with, she ends up being killed, sadly enough. Bruce staggers up to the wall, is what he sees.
Yeah.
And, you know, Roper kind of gives him a head shake, a thumbs up, and Bruce gives him a thumbs up back just to see the British planes and that coming in.
Starting to come in.
And helicopters just coming in to actually, you know, save the day, and they land and, you know, come in, and they're going to... Well, Han's dead, so they obviously can't try him.
Yeah. Well, he's
but they have enough proof to, shut down the tournament, shut down the island, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
so that's kind of ends the...
It's a very simple ending. You know, they all showed up. The work has been done. Bruce is exhausted. Roper's exhausted. You know, you get to see the impact of us losing a lot of great characters.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, sometimes that's what's needed.
Yeah.
You know, in a war, basically. But really, It's nice that they didn't go into, you know, too much blowing up of the ending and what's going to happen with people and stuff. They just kind of left it with a, you know what, the good guys won.
Right, yeah.
And they left it at
that. The cavalry's coming in and, cleaning things
over.
Up.
You've got that sense of completion.
Right,
you didn't. Nobody overdid it. You know, it's done.
Yep.
Let's, you know, just call it quits at that.
Yeah, it was a really simple, nicely done ending to kind of tie a lot of the storylines up, which is great. Nothing over the top or that sort of thing. And the whole film on it was amazing for, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, it's...
Start to finish.
You've got a couple of fun facts about the film before
we
go to our next break.
We'll come back. We'll take a break now, right? And we'll come back with some fun facts.
We'll take our last break, and we'll come back with a few fun facts and then do a quick review of The New Fists of Fury.
Stay tuned, loyal listeners. There's more We Got the Geek still to come.
Hey, K2 here from We Got the Geek. Not only am I your favorite podcaster, but I'm also your Scentsy independent consultant. Scentsy offers a safe, wickless alternative to scented candles. We sell ceramic warmers that use a low wattage light bulb to warm our specially formulated wax cubes infused with fragrance. With over 80 scents available, I'm sure you'll find a few favorites. We also offer stuffed animals that have a scent pack included, broom sprays, travel tins for your car or locker, and our new Layers line of fragrance that lets you build a new fragrance wardrobe layer by layer, from your skin to your clothes. Contact me for a catalog, to smell some yummy samples, or to book a party. We're also hiring. Ask me about joining my team. Email me at kstu.wickless@me.com or on my website, kstu.sensi.ca.
All right. that we're back. You know, we've just given I think an incredibly fun review of
yeah, it was great.
The final movie of Bruce Lee's career and sadly his life. Enter the Dragon, an awesome, awesome film. And Jody, you said you had some fun facts for us about the film.
Yeah, so for those that have listened to the show before, I always do like some fun facts based on the films. I enjoy it and hope you guys do that listen.
I enjoyed them. Because like, awesome. Half the time it's stuff that I missed.
Yeah, that's true, right? So we can all learn from it. So some of the names that were considered for Enter the Dragon before actually they ended decided, okay, this is the final title. Blood and Steel, right?
That's a cool title.
Yeah, that wasn't
not
too bad.
Not fitting for this movie,
no,
but pretty cool.
But cool title. Dragons and Tigers Fight, kind of lame.
Dragons and Tigers Fight.
Yeah, Dragon was Bruce, and the Tigers were Hans and his people. So,
no,
right? See, yeah. Iron Hand, obviously related to Han.
Too obvious.
Yeah. And then Operation Dragon, which sounds too much like Operation Condor, which is a Jackie Chan film.
Well, that came out much later, but yeah, no, it's I didn't like that.
No, that one I wasn't too thrilled of. Deadly 3, which was in reference to Williams, Rauper, and Lee.
I don't think that title really would have been suitable.
No. One that I think might have been is Han's Island.
That would have worked.
Yeah.
For me. I think I would have been okay with that.
That would not too bad, right? So those were kind of some of the titles that they were considering. Now this was, as we were mentioning, this is Bruce's final film, before his death, July 20th, 1973. He did see this final print of it before it was released and he was happy with it. That was like, obviously, you know, he included that fight scene at the beginning. It was released only 6 days after his death in Hong Kong. Yeah. So it was released in July 26, 1973. In 2004, Enter the Dragon was actually deemed culturally significant in the U.S. and selected for preservation in the National Film Registry.
Awesome.
So, yeah, that's pretty huge. I love that. That's awesome. And
2004, you said?
Yeah, 2004.
So 31 years later.
Yeah. Wow.
Took that's a long almost time. As long as he was alive. He died at 33.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, younger than we all are now, sadly.
32, I thought. 32, 33. What's a year?
Yeah.
It was actually the first Chinese martial arts film to be produced by a major Hollywood studio, which I think we touched upon
that, yeah.
And the fighting without fighting scene we mentioned is a famous anecdote involving the 16th century samurai Sukihara Bokuden. So that I didn't know.
No.
That was kind of neat. And Yen Wei, he was actually Bruce Lee's stunt double in the film. He did the acrobatic flip over the abbot's hands after the fight scene with Sammo Hung.
Right.
He beats Sammo, and then the monks all hold their hands up, or the abbots, and then he actually does a flip over them.
I think he was the same double for a few of the other films that Bruce did.
Yeah.
Bruce did use a double for some of the acrobatics.
Right.
Yeah.
So he did that acrobatic flip, and then he was also, when O'Hara gets beaten, he grabs Bruce's leg, and he flips Bruce. Bruce does a kick to his face as he's flipping backwards. He did that scene as well, so that wasn't Bruce as well, which is, like, the editing was amazing, because I always Absolutely. Thought that was him.
Yeah, right? Me too.
The budget for this film, now, the sources I found online were, like, they had a range from $500,000 to $850,000. One source said $500,000, another source said $850,000, so I'm going to say somewhere
in between.
Right.
Still nothing still, compared to today's movie.
Right. Pretty small budget, considering. But it amazingly grossed $25 million North America alone.
Wow.
And $90 million worldwide.
Awesome.
A little bit,
that's, that's incredible.
From 850, we'll say, to, you know, that.
And we've got some movies that's now crazy. With that same kind of budget that don't come anywhere near.
No, exactly. So that was huge. It's regarded as one of the best films of 1973 for, like, just that era,
across
that
the
year,
board, yeah.
Right? A lot of parodies you were talking about, right?
I don't know about so much parodies, but just homages.
Homages, yeah, they did references to it or parodies in that case. So some of the films were like The Pink Panther Strikes Again, The online publication The Onion, they do a lot of spoofs, that sort of thing. Takeshi's Castle, that Japanese game show, was one. And I think that was Wipeout. No, not Wipeout. What did they do?
Something like that.
Yeah. It's a funny game show. Kentucky Fried Movie, which is a John Landis film. He pays homage to, I think, a Fist of Fury in it. And one called Balls of Fury. Well,
Balls of Fury, you know, is classic. That was a hilarious movie, yeah.
Yeah. In the Hall of Mirrors, they say there's over 8,000 mirrors used just for that alone.
Right.
That must have been, like, mind-boggling just to try and hide the cameras, hide the guys behind it.
Just a logistics nightmare, for sure.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Bruce, this is the first film where Bruce actually uses his natural voice. All the other films we talked about
were dubbed.
Right? So this is his first film where he actually used his voice. And then there was a TV show he was in called Marlowe, where that was also his natural voice. He wasn't overdubbed there. So just those two areas.
Some pretty cool facts there.
Yeah, I think I covered some of the other ones. Oh, so there was a couple of accidents. Bruce, obviously, we mentioned before, getting cut with the bottles.
Yeah.
The other one was he was actually bit by that cobra.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
You know, he's stuffing it in the bag and that sort of thing, or just taking it out. At one point, he gets bit by it.
Right.
But the cobra was actually devenomed and the gland was taken out.
Oh,
so
nice.
He obviously just got bit. Still, that freaking hurt.
Yeah,
really.
I guess so.
Key Luke was actually a Chinese American actor, and he overdubbed Han's dialogue because Han didn't speak English.
Wasn't he in Gremlins?
Possibly. Yeah, exactly. Yep. So,
wow.
Han yeah,
that I never
our producer just threw that out there. Wow.
He's the guy that sells them the gremlin, I think.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
He's the little Asian fellow,
yeah.
Little Fu Manchu. Yeah.
Yeah, that guy.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So, he's the one that overdubbed the line, and Han just mouthed his lines and that sort of thing. So that was kind of interesting. I didn't know that. And this leads up to where Jackie Chan comes into play. So in that big scene at the bottom of the guards, Jackie Chan comes off the screen. He runs from left to the right, and he actually attacks Bruce from behind. And Bruce breaks the grip, smacks him, and then he ends up breaking his neck kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he also, so that was the one big scene. And then there's another scene where he actually gets hit by the double sticks, I think, or a stick of some sort. And Bruce actually accidentally hit Jackie at the time, and he apologized for it. And he kind of said, you know, hey, sorry about that. Hope it doesn't, you know.
Yeah.
No bad feelings. And he wanted him to actually work with him on other films.
Yeah.
Well, and sadly enough, that never came true because of his passing in 73. But that just alone would have been, like, amazing.
Yeah, it certainly would have taken Jackie to a whole other level, getting
for sure.
More opportunities. Because, you know, he was a stuntman and an extra kind of thing in several of these movies.
Mm-hmm.
And, it would have been great to see them actually work together.
Yeah.
You know, kind of on par with each other as Jackie's career progressed.
Yeah, he's pretty young back then too, right? So that was a big thing. The other thing was that he actually filled in as Bruce when Bruce ran up the wall and William sees him outside and says, hey, a human fly.
Yeah.
So that was actually Jackie Chan doing the wall climb.
Nice.
So that was pretty cool. I didn't realize that too.
And that's
he was a stuntman in many ways.
Yeah,
right?
He really was. And it's kind of neat that you kind of got that sequence where Jackie's kind of filling Bruce's shoes,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of taking on that kind of agility and stuff like that. And I guess that's kind of what leads us into...
Yeah, so this was Jackie's kind of big break, and then Bruce passed, and
Bruce
they were looking
passed,
at,
yes,
okay,
sadly,
we
yeah.
need another, you know, big Bruce Lee, which leads to
somebody
new
that Bruce
Fist of Fury.
Certainly did respect, yeah.
Yeah, and, for sure.
You know, it came down to, Lo Wei, who did Fist of Fury with Bruce, and, he came back for new Fist of Fury. Lo Wei is actually the inspector again, and what we're doing is we're picking up right where Fist of Fury left off, actually. You know, all the same characters... minus Bruce, you know, he dies at the end of the movie with the gunshots and stuff like that. But we're picked right up off of, you know, the Japanese have now just kind of done in the school that they were all part of, and they're all in hiding, and they kind of want their revenge. And we're now in another another place, some island off of China. And I have to say, getting into this movie, it was tough.
Yeah.
You know, Jackie Chan, his character is a thief who's kind of thinks he's tough and he's really not. You got all these different rival schools around, you know, all these Chinese rival schools, but you've also got a Japanese school, and Japanese are still the primary villains here.
Right.
They've got the dominant presence. They're kind of holding their, you know, the Chinese under their feet kind of thing. You know, and you get your introduction to Jackie Chan as being a character who just hates the Japanese, and he picks a fight with two of them, gets his ass handed to him, but he's still standing there like he's tough enough to take him on. Like, you just got your ass handed to you. And I have to say, I was going through the first two-thirds of this movie, I was pretty disappointed. But I wasn't disappointed necessarily in Jackie. I was more disappointed in Lo Wei. You know, the quality of his films just wasn't there in this one, in my opinion, for the first two-thirds.
Right.
I thought the story fell short. Even though it was okay to follow, I found myself falling asleep. It was just kind of dull. Jackie wasn't in as much of it as I thought for the first two-thirds, because it was more focusing on the previous characters and their story as they're continuing on.
Right.
So I can see how it could have been better, but it just, I don't think it was executed that well.
How was the energy in it?
The energy was just kind of stagnant.
Stagnant?
To me.
Okay.
But what it boils down to is that there's a school that wants Jackie to study there. He doesn't want to do it. He thinks he's tough enough without it. And that's where he kind of gets into trouble. He's a thief, and, you know, he gets beat up and, you know, with almost killed because he, you know, he got busted stealing and he doesn't want to join this rival school. And, you know, it was just, the story was kind of clear, but it was hard to follow. This is where I'm falling in and out of sleep and not paying attention, which is weird for me with a martial arts movie.
Yep.
I get pretty into them. And
yes.
I have to say, for the first two thirds, there's really not much I can say. It was just kind of boring.
Okay.
You know, with the little battles and fights that were there, weren't that great.
Choreography?
Choreography was decent. Really falling short for me. It was just kind of okay.
Okay. Yeah.
But even the characterization, I didn't feel was that great. Yeah, I couldn't attach to the characters the way I did in Fist of Fury.
Right, exactly.
And they're the same characters, the same actors in many aspects.
Wow.
Just didn't like it. But then we get to the last third.
Okay.
Where you've got all these rival schools kind of under the thumb of the Japanese school. And it gets to the point where they're just kind of asserting themselves as, you guys are going to take on our name and take on, you know, you're going to do what we say. You're no longer your individual schools. And, you know, if you want to challenge me, your best guy's got to beat my best guys. And if you do, if you beat us, not only will we shut, you know, we concede to, you know, you guys being the top dogs, we'll take on your school's name. And you really don't have, you know, you got a couple of these kind of weakling school teachers, you know, or senseis, whatever you want to call them, not really wanting to compete with the Japanese, you know.
Right.
We'll just do what you say. That's fine.
Yeah.
But then you've got these other characters that stand up to them. And this is where it gets a little bit more interesting. And sadly, you don't give a shit about the characterization.
So it's kind of lost at this point.
But this is now where there's just tons of fighting. You got like almost like 15 solid minutes of just fighting.
Wow.
Where you've got all these people fighting to the death. And, you know, Jackie comes in and he's fighting, and the Japanese guy's daughter's fighting, and they're all just kicking the shit out of each other, and people are flying left, right, and center. And to be honest with you, I don't even really remember quite how the movie ended.
Right.
You know, there was a lot of elements to the choreography that were kind of lame. But the fighting was okay.
Okay.
But it was certainly active enough to keep you interested. And then as soon as it was done, it was just like, well, wait a minute, what kind of happened?
Yeah, that was it? What?
But the key thing to remember here is that really Jackie got an opportunity to be the star.
Right.
You know, even though he wasn't really prevalent through the movie, the entire movie, this was his starring feature. This is him kind of kicking his career off on his own, following the footsteps of Bruce, to do what Bruce did, and that's have a successful film career moving forward.
Right.
And, you know...
So this film, you're going to give it out of 10, you'd say...
I'd give it a 4.
4? Enter
just,
the Dragon, you would give it a...
Enter the Dragon, I give 11 out of 10.
Yeah, exactly.
Hands down. But yeah, it's not a New Fist of Fury is not a movie I would recommend unless it's like the only movie out of Jackie Chan's career you haven't seen.
Mm-hmm. We mentioned this one only because it's the segue from Enter the Dragon.
It really does is the segue to let go Jackie's of Bruce career.
Right.
And welcome Jackie
right, into exactly.
the fold. And, you know, this is going to lead us into some great Jackie Chan movies that we'll review on future episodes.
Yep. Exactly like you
this
mentioned.
One wasn't a great movie, but a great turning great point for us to see Jackie has now got the mantle.
Right.
You know,
our next martial arts editions, for those that want to know, is going to be, we're going to start going into some Jackie Chan films.
Yeah.
And we'll...
Lots to choose from.
Yeah, we got lots to choose from. Probably start up with some early stuff, then some middle of career, and maybe the end of career. So we still got to discuss it, and we're probably
certainly looking forward to that one because it's going to be fun. There's some, you know, some of his early stuff is great. Middle of his career stuff is awesome,
mm-hmm.
and later career, certainly you get a lot more acting out of him.
Yeah,
which is actually quite a nice change.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you certainly get to see some chops that, you know, people didn't really pay attention to the fact that he had. You know, you lose some of that comedy element to see more of a serious side, and it's impressive.
Yes.
So, yeah, okay. Really looking forward to continuing on with now Jackie Chan.
Yeah, it's going to be great. So I guess we'll wrap it up.
Yeah. Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah, it's great discussing this with you guys.
Yeah, always fun.
Yeah.
And looking forward to more. So
stay tuned.
Yeah, keep following We Got the Geek, and you're going to get some more coming soon.
Thanks for listening. To hear more We Got the Geek, check us out at www.wegotthegeek.com and on iTunes.